Why do we hesitate to enter into agreements that seem imbalanced or unfair to one party or the other? Welcome again to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and your study guide author. And this quarter, we are continuing our study of the covenants throughout Scripture. And throughout these 13 weeks, we'll be examining different sections of the Bible. And to converse with me about it this quarter, I have Dr. Alden Thompson and Sean Carpenter, both teachers here at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology. I have entered into a few agreements in my life with people. I've had to sign on the dotted line for a number of things, purchased some homes and that kind of thing. But I'm hesitant. I hesitate to enter into agreements that seem like somebody is getting the better of the other. Are you the same way? Do you feel the same, that you'd be hesitant? Or are you ready to jump into those kinds of agreements?
Well, we're probably reluctant if we're on the short end. Should we be reluctant also if we're on the...
Yeah.
See, that's... That's, I think, where we need to be fairly careful. It's like selling a used car. You can shape your message in such a way. For instance, you begin hearing some noises, you know. And so you put it up for sale. Somebody asks you about it. Got a full service record here.
Runs fine.
Yeah.
Full service record.
Be careful what you say.
And you don't say that, well, but last week I began to hear some noises.
Right.
It's like the car you spilled milk in. And then you sold it in the middle of the winter.
Oh, no. And by the time summer came, it smelled different.
It smells fine in the winter.
Yeah. When I was young, my brother and I had one of those little racetracks where you put the car, two cars side by side with a little slot in the track, and the car has a little pin that sticks down in the slot, and each of the two of my brother and I each had a little, looked like a little pistol with a trigger, and you pull the trigger and your car races around the track. And you couldn't go too fast around the corners or your car would flip off, right? You had to know to slow down and then speed up. And my brother and I played with that, oh, quite a bit. We really enjoyed it. But then it got disassembled and put in a box and put up in the cupboard. And we kind of outgrew it and moved on to some other things. But neither of us could remember if it continued to run or if we had packaged it because it stopped working. And our family had a garage sale. And I remember putting that box out. It was actually my brother's, but we put it out and we put a price tag on it. We put a price tag of $5 on it. We probably bought it back then even for $25 maybe.
Yeah.
But we just thought, we don't play with it. What we hadn't checked is if it even worked. And a boy from town came with his family, and we could tell by the clothes they were wearing he was fairly poor. In fact, when he reached into his pocket, his pants fell down close to his hips, and he didn't have anything on underneath his pants. We knew he was so poor, he couldn't even afford underwear, right? And he decided he wanted it as he reached in his pocket to pull out his money. He had only $4, and my brother and I agreed that $4 was fine, and we took his $4 and gave him the box. And afterwards, both of us wondered, had we gotten the better of him because we gave him something that didn't work? And our hearts, both of us, felt this pang of regret that we weren't sure if it was an imbalanced, an unfair transaction. You know, Alden, your car with the knocking. Yeah. We're hesitant, but maybe we're ready to enter into agreement where we end up on the good side. Is that true? Are we happy? If somebody says, hey, I'll make an agreement with you, 80-20, you get 80, I get 20.
I think we often wonder what the motives are.
If such a,
why would you give me such a good deal? is there something cloaked in there, or do you want something more of me?
I think the best bargain is when both sides are clear, and they understand it, and it, there doesn't seem to be any special pleading one way or the other. I've got something that I don't need anymore. You need it. Is this price a fair price? Wonderful. We'll go for it.
Well, I think it also depends on how personal the entity is that you are making the deal with. If I go down to Walmart and I want to buy something that would normally be $100 and it's on sale for $5, I don't feel bad at all. But Brant, if you sell me something that should be $100 and you sell it to me for $5, I feel like now you have something over me.
Oh, the imbalance creates an imbalanced relationship.
Now
as well.
I owe you something in our relationship, and I don't know what that is.
Sure.
Maybe not something physically, but maybe I owe you something else.
And maybe you worry that I could call you to account sometime and said, hey, remember I sold you that for $5 when it was $100, and maybe you could pay me back now that I could call you for what you feel is.
We question whether or not altruism actually exists.
I think this is sometimes the case when we look at the biblical covenants, because so often the covenant ends up being so one-sided. Today in our study, we're looking at the children of the promise, the offspring of Abram, who is later has his name changed to Abraham. And we think about the identity of Israel and the people of God. And I without getting into all the theological background into this topic, this presents one of the greatest divisions among Christianity today, and that is the identity of Israel. Hmm. If you were to talk to our dispensationalist friends and many Baptists and those in Pentecostal churches, they will tell you that Israel is the ethnic offspring of, many of them would argue that the Israel is the ethnic offspring of Abraham, through whom God made covenants and then promises to those people. But in the New Testament, they'll say that then the church is a new entity in the world, and that Israel in the Old Testament and the church in the New are to be completely separate. We are to divide between the two groups. The promises of God in the Old Testament are for Israel. The promises in the New Testament are for the church, and never the two shall overlap. Mm. Now, there are some that would agree that there is some overlap, and others will say, you'll hear some Christians say, no, the church has replaced Israel. Israel's no longer important. Now all that matters is the church. And then there are still others who would say, no, Israel in the Old Testament and Israel in the New Testament have always been inclusive of people beyond the borders or boundaries of Judaism. Hmm. Help me make some sense of this. We think about Abraham's offspring. How does the New Testament treat this? How does the rest of the Old Testament treat this idea of who are God's people? Who is Israel?
Well, if God is really the creator and father of all people, then all people need to be considered his children. And there are some amazing passages in both Testaments that point in this direction.
Yeah.
I don't see how we can say that God is exclusive. In fact, I remember one of my teachers when I was here, a student, J. Paul Grove, who said Israel was never called for privilege, always called for responsibility.
Responsibility. Mm.
And that's a line which has been deeply embedded into me, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
And it's a sobering one for, I think, those of our faith tradition, Seventh-day Adventists, right, when we consider that we feel we've been given a special purpose. Yeah. And yet, when we think about the children of Israel, the offspring of Abram, and what they were entrusted with, and if we are entrusted with something similar, we see what happens to Israel when we come to the New Testament and some of Jesus' parables. And some of the phraseology, the kingdom of God will be taken from you and given to a people bearing its fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Right? It's a warning to me.
Of course, if we look closely at the New Testament, everything we have comes by grace. I remember a funny story. There were four of us way back. In fact, you will remember. The four teachers used to play racquetball together.
I do.
John Dibdall. Winslow.
Scriven,
and Thompson.
And all of you had your own unique ability on the court.
Oh.
You didn't all play the same way.
Dibdall had the reach. All he had to do was stand in the middle of the court. He could reach anything.
Yep.
And Winslow's version was that Thompson has the speed, Scriven has the power, Dibdall has the reach, and Winslow has the brains.
He knew where to be.
Yeah.
It was all positioning.
No, he would play in such a way. He would work hard on the first game, Then he would just slip through the second game and then turn on the afterburners again and win the third game. Well, we caught on to that. So we'd work the socks off of him in the first game, and then he didn't have anything left.
He's all winded.
But I remember once Chuck Scriven, we played some singles games, and he said, Thompson, you know, speed on your feet is like perfect pitch. Either you have it or you don't.
Or you don't.
And I know, you know, because I've got pretty good speed on my feet. I didn't have good hands, so I could run into the end zone and drop the ball, you see. So there was always that part. But there was a passage in 1 Corinthians that is such an amazing one. And it goes like this in the Contemporary English Version. So what is so special about you? What do you have that you were not given? And if it was given to you, how can you brag?
How can you brag? Yeah. It was a gift.
It was a gift.
You don't get to brag about the gift.
You know, there are some kids who will say, oh, I'm not very smart, but I work hard. Fine. Who gave you the ability to work hard? I don't care where you cut it. It's a gift.
It's a gift, yeah. Yeah, well, when we think about Israel here, they were given a promise through Abram that the offspring of Abram would be a blessing to the nations. And I think that starting out with that sort of a promise, it is a gift, right? It's a gracious covenant promise of God that he will make them a blessing. And then I have to say, how far does that blessing extend? One of the noteworthy words in this passage is a blessing to the nations, right? The goyim, the people outside of Israel. It was God always intended to not just bless Israel, right? Alden, you mentioned the difference between privilege and responsibility. What was Israel's responsibility to the world?
To be a light to the nations.
To be a light. Hmm. Sean, you do a lot with music. Music has the ability to either be a bright light and shine nicely, or it can darken a mood really quickly, can't it?
Yeah. And the musician knows what they're doing with the music. And they know what that music is going to do with the mood. Unless they don't know that they're singing off tune very badly.
But those who have any talent in music, they know how to be a blessing to people around them, right?
Exactly.
And you know the gifts. And you sing, you play the guitar. Do you have perfect pitch?
Absolutely not.
No.
Not even close.
No. But between you and Holly, the two of you do well with a guitar and a violin and a piano, and you make good sense of music, and it's a blessing. But again, like Alden said, those blessings that you have been entrusted with are gifts that you recognize and share with others. Israel was called to be a blessing to the nations from the very beginning, right? What happened in Israel's history? How well did they do with that privilege? Maybe we could say they were privileged with a blessing to give to the nations. How did they do with their responsibility? If we just trace quickly the story of Israel.
Very badly.
Not so well.
Where did they go wrong? What happened?
Well, they took, instead of responsibility, they took it as a privilege. See, and that's even a problem within the Adventist community. We've often used the phrase that we are the remnant.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to say that without sounding arrogant, you know.
Agreed.
And I like, you know, Chuck Scriven uses the term, we are called to be a remnant. But that's really quite different than saying, we are the remnant. Yeah.
And I prefer the term, we've been entrusted with a remnant message.
Yeah, that's a good way.
That helps make sense of it for me.
I think what concerns me, though, is that this theme of pride starts at the very beginning of time, and it seems to be the thing that just keeps throwing us off again and again and again. And I think if a person were to want to just jump ahead of the game and make comparisons to even our modern time, is pride still the thing that's throwing us off? And is pride keeping us from being that blessing to other nations? And did pride keep even in Jesus' time, I think pride was what Jesus fought against, and it's what we're fighting against today in our own ranks.
Well, it's a very challenging concept because we all like people who have self-confidence. But as soon as it moves from self-confidence into arrogance and egotism, then it becomes a great curse.
So what's the difference? How can you be confident? How can you be confident in what you believe in and in the God that you serve and yet not have the pride that has destroyed religious people throughout all time?
Gifts of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit.
And I think you're right about that, Alden. And there's also this sense in which competence in an ability, for instance, Sean, you could play the guitar much better than I can, or the piano much better than me. And if someone said, hey, could you sit down and play a song on the piano for me? You would probably say, sure, what song would you like me to play? And you would graciously oblige. I would hear that with fear and trepidation. And Alden, you used to play hymns in class in the morning sometimes before Old Testament exegesis, and we'd sing, and you'd hammer it out on the computer on the keyboard. And I could not do that. It would take me 20 minutes to get through one song. And if somebody asked me to do it, I have no competence. But Sean, you wouldn't come across as arrogant to me. You'd come across as competent. You say, sure, I'll play it. That's different than saying, well, I can play it and you can't. I think there's a sense of comparison that comes about in the arrogance. I'm here and you are there. There's where the arrogance seems to come through. Israel ended up with some of that, and I even mentioned this in the study guide today. What role did forgetfulness and arrogance play in Israel's failure to be a blessing to their neighbors? Over and over in the book of Deuteronomy, they're told to remember. To remember where they came from. They were slaves. Remember who their parents were. Who were their parents? Israel's parents, right? What does the text say? It says, your father was an Amorite, a wandering Aramean, and your mother was a Hittite. It's like, don't forget, you're a mixed race. You're not even a pure race, okay? Yeah. Remember where you came from. And then, of course, there's other places we could read in Scripture to talk about the identity of the makeup of Israel. But it wasn't because they were more beautiful, more wealthy, better looking, more intelligent, right? They didn't have those things. God simply made a covenant and said, I'm entrusting you with this responsibility to be a light to the nation so that people know me. That's my goal, is that people have a relationship with me. Where our time is drawn to an end, but I would encourage you, if you haven't read through Romans chapter 2, Ephesians 1 and 2, and Galatians chapter 3, Romans 2, Ephesians 1 and 2, and Galatians 3, and take a glimpse at who Israel is there and how the doors of God's people open up and expand in Jesus, and yet the responsibility remains the same. That is, that we would be a light to the nations. I want to say thanks again, Sean and Alden, for joining me in conversation. It's been delightful to get through these lessons together. I also want to say thank you to Samuel Schaffner and our program engineering team behind him, and also to you for listening, and thank you for the good word. I'm Brant Purple.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.